Welcome to the Bloody Disgusting Network.
Hey everyone, I just wanted to give you all a quick heads up to another show to help you get in the mood for Halloween. And when I think scares, the name at the top of that list for me is Stephen King. So check out the Losers Club podcast. The link's also in the show notes. They've been doing a chronological read-through of King's canon since January of 2017, and are just about through the 90s with The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon and Hearts in Atlantis. They offer deep dives into his books and adaptations that span hours and feature multiple guests. For instance, they dedicated six epic episodes to 1986's It. You get a diverse rotating panel of voices, interviews with filmmakers, writers, and composers of the adaptations, and monthly news episodes that cover all things in King's domain. They also cover the books that inspired King, as he acknowledged in Dance Macabre. They even crossed over into audio drama this summer with an episode dedicated to a fictional season 3 of Hulu's Castle Rock. If you're looking for a humorous, critical, and irreverent podcast on the master of horror, make sure to check out The Losers Club wherever you listen to podcasts. No.
This is Creepy, a podcast dedicated to sharing the most famous, chilling, and disturbing creepypastas and urban legends in the world. Whether these stories truly happened or are simply fabrications is for you to decide. These stories may contain graphic depictions of violence and explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Creepy presents The 31 Days of Horror, Day 26, 90s Night. Written by Jacqueline Gaffuni and narrated by Jimmy Ferrer.
With the blinds drawn, tape cassette clicking on, the mood has been set. Benny plops down on his green neon beanbag chair and settles in for his chill-out sesh, lighting up his Bart Simpson-shaped bowl, almost like a beautiful work of art. The first puff of Chronic lines up perfectly with the first line of the song on his Black Crowes album. She never mentions the word addiction in certain company. This was the same ritual Benny had used to get Blaze since he was 16. Melt into the beanbag with eyes closed, bated breath, and wait for the wave to hit. For him, it was unmistakable. His highs weren't spiritual or anything like that, but they were otherworldly in the sense that he was grounded, but soaring at the same time. Here in this world, while his mind was shooting off to another dimension, the first pang of weightlessness hit, and he knew he was about to take off. At this point of his ritual, he usually plays some old school Nintendo until he loses his motor skills and is no longer able to tell his hands which buttons to press to get the little plumber guy to jump over the tweaked out mushrooms. This phase lasts about 25 minutes before he's gone, just staring off into space. This cush is much stronger than what he's used to, Benny thinks as he starts to get that far-off feeling. Unfortunately, this is about the same time, the same moment, he hears a minivan pull up in the driveway.
Oh, fuck, no, not now, Benny groans.
He jumps up, or at least he commands his body to do so. But it's more of a laborious movement. Definitely not as graceful as he'd like. Benny knocks his bowl onto the carpet, and tiny embers begin to spill out. This starts to pull him back into the reality at hand, and he somehow is able to pick up speed in his cleanup process. He tucks the bowl back into his cigar box while simultaneously picking debris off the carpet. No stains or burns, which is good. The key turning in the front door lock is like a bullhorn in a church. It abrasively cuts through his mellow and totally harshes his vibe. Shit, 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 shit! Benny just remembered the Nintendo. He unplugs it from the television and kicks it under the console, as far back as he can, so it's not visible from standing view. He lowers the Black Crowes cassette on his boombox, quickly sits back down on the beanbag as he turns on the television. Hey, hon, I'm home. Awesome, babe. How did it go? I might just get away with this, Benny grims to himself. Oh, you know how my sister is. Just because I can't drink doesn't mean she can't try to find the bottom of that bottomless mimosa. Natalie trails off as she audibly inhales and holds her breath. God damn it, Benny! She bellows and storms into Benny's man cave, formerly the den. What's up, babe? He asks, never turning his gaze from the TV, as if that would make her go away. We've talked about this. I don't care if you smoke. Just open the damn windows when you do. You know it's killing me that I can't join in. It's true. They used to partake in the bud together on the occasional weekend or special event. But now she's carrying their twins, and she doesn't get to enjoy that part of life anymore. And to be completely honest, Benny actually prefers it this way. It gives him an excuse to smoke without her. To smoke how he wants. You're right. I'm sorry. I thought you'd be out of the house longer, that's all. He turns to face his wife and give her the best damn puppy dog eyes he can muster. She breaks out into a laugh, the kind that would make people turn in public. It's not so much a laugh as it is a squawk. Yeah, it's pretty dank. Benny sighs as the words come out of his mouth. Ah, fuck. Here we go. Dank. Benny, are you sure the weed is the only thing you did while I was gone? Natalie pursed her lips, ready to pounce if you said the wrong thing. Yeah, babe, I just forgot to open the windows. No, Benny, you know damn well what I mean. I knew I shouldn't have let you get the fucking beanbag chair. It's too much. I knew I shouldn't have let you. Come on, babe. You know it's strictly for comfort, Benny quipped. Besides, it'll be gone next month. No more man cave, I promise. Please, don't make something out of nothing. It was just a word. He had promised her he would convert his coveted man cave back into the den once she was in her third trimester. As much as he feared the thought, it was time for him to grow up and be a man. He was approaching his 40s and entering fatherhood after all. With relaxed lips, Natalie exhaled and seemed a bit more at ease. I'm sorry, I've just been on edge lately, that's all. Benny smiled to try to soothe her, though he knew that should his lies ever surface, she would hate him. She has good reason not to believe him. He's done this dozens of times before. The only difference is he's getting better at hiding his vices. He had successfully smoothed things over with his wife, so much so that she made him his favorite post-chillax sesh food. Right when his munchies hit. Macaroni and cheese, the dab of hot sauce. Benny and Natalie had a pretty sweet marriage in a dope house, although he felt like adulthood was smacking him right upside the head. With his double whammy pregnancy, he couldn't help but reminisce on his more youthful years and how long he had successfully held on to it, well into his 30s. Later that evening, as he was preparing for bed, Benny made a startling discovery that should have sent him straight to the hospital. Thankfully, Natalie was fast asleep at this point, even though it was only 8:30 p.m. The twins were literally sucking the life and energy out of her. Maternity is amazingly horrifying. It reminded Benny of those spiders whose offsprings eat the mother from the inside out. As Benny cleared out his sinuses, as was his nightly pre-bed routine, he felt woozy. At first, he assumed it was a lagging effect from the hashish earlier that day. But as he threw out his tissue, something caught his eye in the wastebasket. It was unmistakable. Yet his mind did not want to let him wander down that thought. Benny's breath caught in his throat, and he felt his heart begin to race faster than an old man at the bunny ranch. Reluctantly, he bent down to pick up the tissue to inspect it. Just as he feared, smeared onto that Kleenex was his very own death sentence. Turquoise streaks with thin purple waves flowing within them. It was a pattern he was all too familiar with. And anyone who had been alive in the 90s would say it's similar to the pattern found on those soda cups used at movie theaters and bowling alleys. But to see it coming out of your own body? He knew what it meant. But in the moment, he made the choice to ignore it, push it down in the deep recesses of his mind. Instead of leaving the tissue at the top of the wastebasket for his wife to find, he went into the kitchen, wrapped it up in aluminum foil, and threw it outside in the trash bin. As he lay in bed, trying to forget the whole ordeal, Benny had another harrowing experience as he's drifting off to sleep. The smell, the unmistakable smell of strawberry Pop-Tarts. Immediately, he was transported to his childhood home, arriving after a day at middle school. He beelines to the kitchen to pop his favorite after-school snack on the toaster. On his headphones, he faintly hears a soft crooning of Chris Robinson. Oh yeah, there's a smile when the pain comes. Having all but forgotten the frightful events from the prior weekend, Benny found himself downing bottle after bottle at his friend Eddie's house the following Friday night.
So, what are you and the missus doing tomorrow night, man? Halloween stay-at-home date night?
Eddie laughs. He has been successfully going stag since he was 19, and it seems to be holding on to the title as long as he can. Out of all of his friends, Eddie is the last one to not have been married or divorced at this point.
No, Natalie is going to the lake house with a few girlfriends. Trying to enjoy life before impending doom, huh? Please don't refer to my children as impending doom.
Eddie scoffs and looks away.
Whatever, man. You want another beer?
Benny could go for another 3 beers, but that's probably just his subconscious trying to make him obliterate the memory of his horrifying secret.
Nah, dude, I'm good. I probably should get home soon anyway. Hey, what are you up to tomorrow? Since the wifey will be away, I was thinking of hitting up the 90s cover band at Just Jake's tomorrow.
Eddie quickly cut him off.
Jesus, Ben. Another one? That's your third 90s themed bar night this year. It's only June. I'm worried about you, man. Oh, come on. Not you two. Natalie's been on my fucking case, and... Just... Listen, man. I just thought it would be a cool night out, and that's all. And it's Halloween. Can a dude go dress up and play pretend one last time before it's not a, you know, all about him anymore? And he grimaced, in a way that told Benny he was already repulsed by the words that were forming at the tip of his tongue. Yeah, sure, bro, I'll go, but not because I enjoy it. Because I want to make sure you don't fall off the proverbial wagon. Capiche? I can't fall off the wagon if I'm not on it to begin with. I told you, I'm fine. Everything in moderation, right? The truth, though, was that he wasn't fine. In fact, the only reason he was at Annie's that night was because he was in the dog's house with Natalie. She'd walked in on him skimming his high school yearbook while wearing his Letterman jacket earlier that evening. In her hands, she held Benny's old Pokemon cards. "What is this?" she bellowed, as angry and frustrated tears streamed down her ruddy cheeks. He hated seeing her like this, and even worse knowing he's the one that keeps causing her this pain. She began accusing him again, and warning him that he is about to become a father, and he can't keep this up unless he wants to kill himself. He knew everything she was screaming was true, and coming from a place of deep love and concern. But he couldn't stand the criticism. So he did what his own father did best, and stormed out of the house while his wife quietly sobbed in the bedroom. The pain gonna make everything all right. Eddie, being the solid friend he is, comes through and meets Benny at the bar before the band gets on. "Natalie isn't going to show up at my house and accuse me of being an enabler for this, is she?" he quipped. Benny chuckled, but this passive-aggressive attitude was starting to wear him down. "Just shut up and let me buy you a drink." Eddie perked up and dropped the subject immediately. The bar was packed, and surprisingly, Eddie and Benny seemed to be on the older side of the crowd. It was mostly young 20-something-year-olds all decked out in chokers and JNCO jeans for Halloween. Hashtag do it for the gram, Benny thought. Just then, the cover band came on, and the bar erupted in applause and whoops. Christ. None of the band members even looked old enough to have been alive when some of the songs they were covering first aired on the radio. Benny begins to sweat and tremble from excitement from what's about to happen. The truth is, this is his 7th 90s night in the past month. He's been following all the cover bands and their performance routes. He normally attends alone, tells his wife he's at a poker night or at Eddie's house. If only she knew what he was really doing. The lights dimmed and the crowd begins to shout and scream. Michael Buffer's voice breaks through the speakers.
"Let's get ready to rumble!"
Benny is soaring now. His mind was shooting off to another dimension. This is the high he's always been searching for. Longing for his next fix. This is the high that has gotten him into trouble before, into trouble now. And yet he cannot stop it. He cannot help himself. Deep down, he knows he's an addict that needs help. Yet he doesn't want it. Not yet, anyway. He just needs one more to tide him over. And then. The band starts playing all the hits. but none of them are a surprise to Benny. He's been to all their gigs in the past few months and knows their lineup by heart. They always start with Third Eye Blind's Jumper, then go to some Chumbawamba, Nirvana, then Foo Fighters. At this point, though, they throw in something unexpected. We got a special song request today, and we'd like to slow things down. Hope you all enjoy. Benny is steeped in anticipation. New song? This is unlike them. That's when he hears the first guitar strum and instantly knows what's about to hit. He can hardly contain himself when he hears. She never mentions the word addiction. The euphoria is unlike anything he's experienced before. This was it. This was the dragon he was chasing. He was transported back to his childhood home. Instead, this time, it didn't feel like a fleeting memory. He was physically there, with his mom in the kitchen making breakfast. Oh, you're up, Benny boy. I just put your breakfast in the toaster. We'll be ready in a second. And he is enveloped by that smell of the strawberry Pop-Tart and the warmth of the morning sun seeping through the window. And his mom is still alive. And he is just home. He is home. Eddie is dumbstruck as he watches the gurney be wheeled out at the bar. He saw it happen, yet he still has not fully processed it. One of the cops came up to get a statement. I just don't fucking understand. There he was just jamming out, having a good time, and the next thing I know, I see that blue and purple shit dripping out of his nose, and then he fell, and he was... Sir, did your friend suffer from constant longing and reminiscing? Like, to the point that it's an obsession? I mean, he's come a few times to these events. He had issues in the past, but he got help and was past it, and... He trailed off as he saw the gurney hoisted into the ambulance. I understand, sir, but by the looks of it, it was probably a ruptured nostalgioma in his hippocampus. We see this far too often. If you ask me, gigs like this that overstimulate nostalgic feelings should be shut down. That's just me. Anyway, is there any next of kin we should be reaching out to?
All he could think of kids, siblings, was how his friend was gone. And he had just made those two babies fatherless before they were even born. A smile. Benny had died with a smile on his face. And though it would take years of therapy to recount every little detail of his friend's last moments, one day, Eddie will remember what was playing in the background as Benny died. She says she talks to angels. Says they call her out by her name.
For your bonus episode, Creepy presents The Halloween Decoration, written by Tropical Rabbit. When I was 10 years old, I moved into a foster home. My deadbeat parents went out for cigarettes and beer one night and never came back. At least that was a story I've been told for the past 30 years. But now I finally feel like I should tell the truth about what happened the night they disappeared. My parents never wanted me. I was an unplanned mistake that they chose to keep for the welfare benefits. Growing up involved bruises, black eyes, the occasional cigarette burn, and daily verbal beatdowns. One day, near Halloween, a flyer arrived in our mailbox about an arts and crafts fair at the nearby park. When I got the mail after walking home from school, I begged my mom to take me. She always let me put out our meager collection of decorations for the holidays, and I was excited by the prospect to find something cool for Halloween at the fair. She said it was just a stupid fair, but I could go if it would make me shut up about it. She wouldn't give me any money, though, because they couldn't afford it, although they had no problem buying cigarettes and beer all the time. The last time I brought that up resulted in a slap across the face. When the day of the fair arrived, I grabbed my rusted bike and rode to the park with a pocket full of change I'd saved from constantly checking payphone coin return slots. I took the shortcut through the woods and past the rusted car frame littered with cigarette butts and beer bottles where the cool high school kids hung out. The woods opened up into a grassy field with a baseball diamond, playground, and a couple soccer fields. Cars filled with happy families drove into the dirt parking lot and headed to the various tables. I set my bike down against a tree and browsed the pictures, jewelry, and knickknacks displayed at the vendors' tables. Everything was so much more than the $1.55 held in my pocket. I started to cry as I left the last table, realizing I was too poor to buy anything. Dejected, I headed back towards my bike with my head down, wanting to just keep pedaling as fast as I could to get as far away as I could. All of a sudden, I bumped into another table that I hadn't noticed before right beside my bike. "I'm sorry," I said as I wiped the tears from my eyes. "I didn't see you there." The old woman sitting at the table didn't say anything. She just waved her hand in front of the trinkets on the table. Her thinning gray hair was matted down on her blistered scalp, and her face was weathered and wrinkled. I looked at the items on the table, and they all appeared to be Halloween-themed. There was a mummified corpse coming out of a tomb carved out of wood, a clay sculpture of a three-headed wolf standing on its hind legs, holding a smiling, severed head, a girl with a long, flowing dress and long red hair sitting atop a broken, oblong skull, and various other items. These were so detailed and finely crafted that I was sure they were too expensive for me. So I said, "Thanks, but I don't have enough money," and turned around to leave. She started tapping her nails on the table to get my attention. I turned back around and she reached into the bag next to her, pulled out a new trinket and slid it towards me. I asked how much it was and she shook her head no and pushed it closer to me. I reached into my pocket and tried to hand her what little money I had, but she just pushed my hand away and shook her head no again. After thanking her multiple times, I picked up my new decoration to get a better look at it. There was a small house with busted windows and a boarded up door. On the back of the house was a small key. I turned the key until it wouldn't go any further and let go. It emitted a series of clicks as the door opened up and a tall, thin figure wearing a tattered black suit with a top hat and leaning on a cane followed a track I hadn't noticed at first. It moved slowly and jerkily until it stopped a little ways in front of the house. A long, bony arm reached up and took the top hat off its ugly, disfigured face. Skin was hanging off its left cheek, and the right side of its head was missing an eye. Its jaw hung down in a big, open-mouthed smile with long, flat teeth, and it took a bow before going back inside the house. It was a little odd and creepy, but I was not one to turn down something free, so I held it carefully, grabbed my bike, and turned back to wave bye to the old lady. But she was already packing up her things. She gave me a wave and a smile as I got on my bike and pedaled back home. I set my bike down in the grass and ran inside, excited to set up the new decoration in my room. My dad was slumped over in his chair with the Lions game on. My mom was in the kitchen smoking her cigarettes and watching something on the free portable TV they got for attending some sales seminar. I walked slowly by them, trying not to be heard, and went in my room, closing the door quietly behind me. I wound the key up again and set the decoration down on my dresser. Nothing happened. I wound it again, but still nothing. I guessed that it must have broken already and lied down to go to sleep. I was awoken by a clicking sound and looked up at my dresser. The door to the little house opened up and the figure came out. It stopped outside the house and leaned on its cane, staring at me. The smile was gone from its face. Just then, my door opened and my dad stumbled in, yelling at me for not doing the dishes. He smacked me a few times and then stumbled out. I heard a light tapping noise coming from my dresser, and I wiped the tears out of my eyes to see the figure tapping its cane on the ground and staring out the door where my dad had gone. He then went back in the house and the little door slammed shut. This happened a few times over the next week with different reasons for my dad being mad, and once my mom, followed by various displays of anger from the figure. The night before Halloween was particularly bad. My mom and dad were both drunk and had friends over. They thought it would be funny to use me as their servant. I had to keep bringing them drinks and they threw stuff at me whenever I took too long or accidentally spilled anything. Late in the night, my mom's ashtray filled up, so she reached over and put her cigarette out on my arm. I ran crying to my room while they laughed. I noticed the figure had moved off the decoration and was now standing on my dresser, slamming his cane down over and over. Then he pointed his cane at my bed as if to tell me to go lie down. I climbed into bed and closed my eyes as the little figure watched over me. Somehow I fell asleep quickly from the exhaustion and trauma of the day. A piercing scream coming from down the hall in my parents' room woke me up just after midnight. I quietly opened my door and leaned out to look into their room. The moonlight shone in through their windows and I could see the tall, bony figure leaning over the bottom of the bed with his cane pushed down on my dad's chest. He had grown to about 7 feet tall and his mouth was biting down on my dad's leg. His big flat teeth were grinding back and forth across the bone. Then I heard a loud snap as its powerful jaws broke right through the bone. My mom and dad were both screaming as the figure's mouth moved further up my dad's leg and began grinding its teeth back and forth again. My dad tried to pull away, but the pain and the pressure of the cane must have been too much. My mom jumped out of bed and ran behind the monster. It forcefully swung the cane around, tripping her and knocking her into the wall. She crumpled into a heap on the floor, moaning in pain. My dad looked over at me and let out a weak cry for help. But I just stood there unmoving and watched the violent spectacle unfold before me. After a couple of minutes, one of my dad's legs was completely gone, and he looked to be passed out from the pain. My mom slowly started crawling toward me. The monster walked over and lifted his cane high above his head. He then brought it down with so much force, it went through her leg, pinning her to the floor. The monster went back to work eating my dad's other leg, followed by his arms, torso, and lastly his head. My mom listened to the mashing and grinding of the bones until there was a short moment of silence, as the last of my dad was gobbled up. I felt nothing as I watched the monster walk over to my mom and bite each finger off one by one as she continued to scream. He then devoured her with a similar methodical process, and when he was finished, he walked over and stood in front of me, towering over me. His eye, that empty socket, felt like they were staring into my soul. He stayed there for a minute and then removed his top hat and took a bow before walking out of the house. I cleaned up the floor, threw away the bedding, and called the police the next day with my story about them going out for cigarettes and beer and not coming back. I kept the house decoration without the figure and put it out every year, except for the last few years. The last couple years have been rough for me. I was laid off and unable to find work for a long time. I didn't mean to hit my son and yell at him so much, I promise. I'm not like my father. I can be good again. You have to believe me. You see, I just left my son's room, and the house was sitting on his dresser. As I was walking out the door, the familiar clicking noise caught my attention. The little door opened and the figure was back. He stopped just outside the little house and stared at me. He then began to grind his teeth back and forth. Halloween is almost here, and I promise I will be good.
For even more from Creepy, including how to submit your own story for consideration, please visit creepypod.com. You can also follow us at CreepyPod on social media and YouTube. All stories told on this podcast are used under license and may not be rebroadcast or distributed without the express prior written consent of the story's author. Please contact us at creepypod@gmail.com for further information on obtaining the rights necessary to rebroadcast or distribute a particular story.